Hello, I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News here on the radio or online or on our podcast. In a few minutes, we are going to get an update on the story you just heard Stephen discussing there from the Capitol, where two lawmakers have been accused of sexual harassment, though members say there is a wider pervasiveness that needs to be addressed. Now, we will address that in a few moments, but first, I am joined by North Dakota U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp, who is pushing legislation to address the problem of missing and murdered Native American women. The bill is Savannah's Act, as it's called, after Savannah Graywin. She's the Native Fargo woman who was 8 months pregnant when she was murdered by a woman who prosecutors say cut her unborn child out of her so she could have her own baby. The baby did survive. Senator Heitkamp, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for continuing to highlight these horrible, tragic events and for continuing to keep this on the front page. Or in your case, I guess, in the top of the hour. But it's an incredibly important story.
And what is or isn't happening right now from a federal policy standpoint that is contributing to and allowing these kinds of cases to happen?
Well, the first thing I want to say is the federal government has a unique responsibility, especially as it relates to Native Americans going missing in Indian country. In North Dakota right now and across the country, in Indian country, major crimes in many, many cases are the obligation and the responsibility of the FBI. They're the responsibility of federal law enforcement working in conjunction with tribal law enforcement. And so what we have is really have a failure of the federal government, first and foremost, to see this issue at all, especially as it relates to abducted and murdered women in Indian country. And, you know, Native American people frequently tell me they feel like the asterisk group. You know, it's like they fall in the other category, not large enough to be Hispanic, not large enough to be African American, and consequently a lot of the challenges of Native people go unattended to or unaddressed. And it, you know, just to give you an example of how pervasive this is and how shocking it should be to all of us, Sadie Youngbird, who runs the domestic violence program on Mandan, Hadatsin, Arikara Nation, which is in the center of our state, personally knows at least five individuals, women, who were murdered in the last 18 months on her reservation. Now, in any other place, given the percentage of population, that would be front page news. That would be epidemic. That would be something that everybody was concerned about. But yet, time after time after time, what happens is there is no awareness of this problem, and many times these cases go cold and they're not addressed. And so what we're trying to do is, number one, build awareness of the program and the lack of attention to these problems. And so our bill would really require the federal authorities to update their crime information databases and then give people on the reservation access to those databases. It was centralized protocols for how law enforcement should manage a case when you do, in fact, get a case, and it would require an annual report to Congress on the statistics on missing and murdered Native women. And we believe that as we build out awareness, there's going to be a better path forward for collaboration and consultation with tribal people.
The list you just gave has a lot of database, data sharing components that become required, a lot better communication. Frankly, it seems like a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that I'm sure your contention isn't happening. Is there an on-the-ground component and even a cultural component that you're not addressing with this legislation?
Not in this particular legislation, but from the very beginning when Director Ray was being considered as the new FBI head. You know, when he came to my office, I demanded he come in and talk to me. And I spent the whole half hour of my time with him talking about his obligation and the FBI's obligation in Indian country. He has told me in subsequent conversations that he's put his third in charge with a special project to try and address these concerns, because it's not just this murdering and murdered and missing women. you know, we have a drug crime epidemic in Indian country that's going undetected, and we have a sexual assault problem in Indian country that's going undetected and unprosecuted. And, you know, many times the FBI will say, it's not big enough. Well, you know what? You're the only game in town for us to actually get a prosecution in Indian country, so you better make it big enough. It's a big enough issue to the people who live there. And so we are really putting a lot of back pressure on the FBI to come up with new strategies on how they're going to work in collaboration with tribal law enforcement, local law enforcement, to build out better resources. The other act that we're working on would mandate the development of Amber Alerts in Indian country. Recently did a training in North Dakota with many tribes from across the region and across the country. Not one of those people in that training, not one of those tribes in the training actually had an effective Amber Alert.
Okay, so that surprised me. That surprised me, Senator. I thought that was a universal thing.
No, I mean, this goes back again to who gets left behind and who gets forgotten. I mean, you know, when you look at local law enforcement collaboration, long time, long history, working with federal authorities, building out these resources, they have the resources. Then you look at what happens in Indian country, because you don't have a sheriff. You have a tribal chief of police, usually a tribal council, maybe a sheriff that has co-jurisdiction but not over perpetrators frequently in Indian country. And so we have got to take a look at all of these challenges. And as a result, Native women, in my opinion, are absolutely victimized at record rates. And if we do not get a cop on the beat, if we don't get a system in place, this will continue. And it will continue to go unrecognized in this country. And that's why this bill is so important, and I'm so grateful to Savannah's family for letting me use her name to promote the bill and to honor her and her family and her sacrifice. But there are literally thousands and thousands and thousands of names that could go on this bill, and that's a tragedy that we cannot let continue.
Heidi Heitkamp with me, North Dakota's U.S. Senator, talking about Savannah's Act. Al Franken of Minnesota is a co-sponsor. You know, in Canada, Senator, there is a National Commission on Murdered and Missing Indigenous Women. Their highest estimate, and it doesn't seem like everyone's in agreement that it's this high, is that there could be 4,000 missing and Indigenous women in Canada over the past 30-plus years. I'm looking at numbers from the National Crime Information Center that suggest 5,700 went missing and or were murdered just last year in the U.S. Why does Canada have this national commission for which I see headlines on the CBC with regularity and the U.S. doesn't?
Again, you know, I think frequently people look to who's going to be the voice, who's going to raise the voice, who's going to say this is unacceptable. And frequently, Native American people do not always have a voice. And you know, Al is on the Indian Affairs Committee with me, and he's been a great partner. We're sharing a project that is unique on childhood trauma. He's just, Al is all in on these issues. And, you know, the more you get educated, the more you realize you can sit in that committee room and listen to these statistics and listen to these problems. And guess what? No one beyond the committee room even knows about it. I say, you know, this is what happens in the Indian Affairs Committee room stays in the Indian Affairs Committee room. And so Al, really at Al's urging, we have, along with Senator Tester from Montana, really taken it on our shoulders to educate our caucus and educate more of other members who do not have Indian country of any sizable amount in their jurisdiction. And so this is exactly what we're trying to do with this bill. And it's not shaming, it's educating. But for my interaction with law enforcement, there's a little bit of shaming involved as well. And yesterday we had a roundtable on opioid abuse. In North Dakota, on reservations, opioids are not as much of a problem as methamphetamine, but addiction is addiction, and addiction is running rampant through these populations and through the populations on Native American reservations. Again, tribal leaders come to us and say, we need help with law enforcement. And so, we expect that we are going to get a full report from the FBI. We need DEA. We need collaboration and drug task forces to operate effectively on the reservation. And then we need interventions. Just to give you a sense of how vulnerable these issues make the population. Childhood trauma and the trauma that we know Native American children experience is at record amounts, almost as high as a war vet. And so when you look at trauma and you realize the what that does to resiliencies in populations, and especially in children, we now have triple the number of children in the last 3-4 years in foster care on reservations with no foster families to take care of them and not enough workers. That's a formula for a reduction, again, in resiliency that's going to lead to more victimization.
Last year during the protests over the Dakota Access Pipeline, some of your positions and statements were not met with universal acceptance or agreement in Indian country. A lot of the protesters at the pipeline site spoke about not being heard. You're using some of the same themes here with this bill. How do you match, the debates and some of your comments over Dakota Access with the effort you're trying to head up and that you are heading up here with this issue?
Well, I think that when you look at the Dakota Access issues, this was a pipeline project that was off reservation. Yes, it affected the waters of the Missouri, but it also was something that had gone through the legal process. And so when you look at the attention that was paid to the pipeline, it was frustrating for me because my argument is, look, I recognize that the pipeline, you see the pipeline as an existential threat to the reservation. But if you don't deal with these other issues, that's not my perspective. That was never my perspective. My perspective is the existential threat in Indian country is children being born opioid affected or meth affected, the lack of services, the lack of education, the lack of opportunity for a job, the high unemployment rates. And so, when I think about my obligations and my commitment to my constituents in Indian country, what I think about is those things that I believe are existential threats to Indian people. And, that's not always going to match up with what maybe people on the ground feel. But I know there's a lot of people, even in Standing Rock, if you gave them a list and said, what's the five problems you want to solve? Dakota Access wouldn't have made the top five.
Final question for you, and it's a different topic because I just have to sneak it in here because the Senate Republican Caucus announced and released its details for its tax cut bill yesterday. There are differences between the Senate and the House version. There's a lot of attention on you because you might potentially be either a swing vote, a possible yes vote. It's not sure what's going to happen. As the Senate bill is written right now, do you support that tax bill?
I have not had a chance to examine it in its entirety. My understanding, I've laid down one simple rule, that no one under $250,000 should see a tax increase. As I understand this bill, and I have to give it fair reading and fair evaluation, there's a fair amount of increases for people who earn under $250,000. And so I'm not someone who signed a letter saying it can never, there can't be any benefit at all to the top 1%. But I will tell you this, that when there's a point at equilibrium that we need to evaluate. But my foundational position is that it cannot raise taxes for the middle class. And if you, in fact, have a lot of children, if you have high medical costs, there's just a number of provisions there that take that result in an increase. And I think we need to be very, very transparent and honest about that. The other thing is that, I tend to get a little in the weeds. I was the former tax commissioner in North Dakota, mm-hmm. where I spent a lot of time, and I understand taxes pretty well. And, adjust the adjusted gross income or when you adjust the taxable income, there's going to be shifts in that. And what I've been seeing, certainly in the House plan, And what I've been seeing in the Senate plan is a shift to put more burden on the middle class, which is exactly what the president told me he did not want to do. He did not want to give millionaires a tax break at the expense of the middle class. And I think you have to be honest about this proposal and realize that in some ways that's exactly what it does.
Senator Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, author of Savannah's Act, which we talked about here earlier as well. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You bet.